Well, good afternoon, everyone. We welcome you to the January session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Larry Welch, representing District 5. I'm from Plattsmouth, Nebraska. Sitting to me to my left is Judge Rico Bishop, representing District 1 from Lincoln, Nebraska. And to my right is Francie Reedman, representing District 3 from Gretna, Nebraska. This afternoon, we will be live streaming, and these will all be archived, so we would remind you when you come up here today if there's any confidential information or sensitive information, you pay attention to that. I will be calling each case by name and number. Once I've called your case, I would ask you to approach, and we'll proceed from there. We will begin today in the matter of In Re Estate of Bialas. That's case number A18-0023. Counsel, please approach.
May it please the court. My name is Jason Milock, and this afternoon I represent the appellant in this matter, Evelyn Blaha and Paul Bialas. This is a case where we are asking you to determine whether the Platt County Court erred by defining the legal term of art issue, a dispositive provision of the last will and testament of Leonard Bialas. Whether it defined that word beyond its statutory and unambiguous meaning. It is my client's position that this is a question of law and should therefore be reviewed de novo on the record. And I would point out that this was brought upon a motion by the appellee to asking the county court of Platt County, Nebraska, to interpret the dispositive provision, the use of the word issue in that dispositive provision. The appellants in the county court proceeding opposed the interpretation insofar as is our position that the meaning of issue in a dispositive provision is a term of art. It has a statutory definition. There is not a need for interpretation by the Platt County Court. And in effect, in a matter that I cited in my brief in the estate of Hammond, or also referred to as Hyman versus Glover, I believe there's a direction from the Nebraska Supreme Court that when the use of the word issue is used, that it is a term of art and is not, should not be, is unnecessary and impermissible to interpret it or construe the will further.
So, counsel, let me ask this question. In the introductory portion of the will, it said, Alice Bialas is my beloved wife. Mary Mimic, Thomas, Lawrence, and Donna are my beloved children. Reference herein shall include them and any children born or adopted hereafter. How could we possibly construe this will? I mean, what does that mean then as it relates to the rest of the will? There's only one devise, there's only language in one section, the residuary devise, to my issue. How would you interpret that section as it relates to naming them and saying these are my children and references herein shall mean that? What's your interpretation of that?
Well, I think the county court attempted to do that and cited in their order the true decision. And I think in looking at that the court's reliance on that is a misreading of the true decision. If you look at the decision in true, it referenced the appellants in that matter were siblings that were saying these aren't the biological or natural children, the definition of children that they did not meet. And in fact, I think wanted the court to order a genetic testing to see whether or not they were the children of the decedent. I think the difference here is that I think the misreading that the county court had was they said, well, because there was a reference to children in the true decision, that therefore you get to where they meet the statutory definition of issue. I think what the decision in true was really saying was that there was no need, that they were children because there was a final order. There was a paternity order of finding in the divorce proceeding that they met the definition of children. It wasn't that they were referred to as children by the decedent in that instance.
So in this case, in the will, when he says, reference herein shall include them and any children born or adopted hereafter, there's no additional reference to them.
There's not. I think it would be a closer decision if in the dispositive provision it had referenced children, as obviously the spouse predeceased her husband, and then it references issue.
In the residuary clause?
That's correct.
If instead of saying issue it would have said children, then it fits neatly, right? You would have no argument then.
Well, I think it's obviously a closer decision because in the document itself it defines it. Now, whether the court would feel that they're bound by the statutory definition of child or children versus the definition given in the testator's document, I guess is a case for another day.
But your clients aren't the issue either.
No, they are not the issue.
And so their right to inherit would be because it, by intestacy then, because the will didn't otherwise provide for the residual estate. That's your argument, right? Because if issue is there, he had no children, natural children.
Or any other as children as defined under the statute.
Yeah. So wouldn't that be right by statute that if a will doesn't effectively dispose of an estate, then it passes to heirs?
That would be the result if the court were to, if this court were to reverse the county court's decision, then the result would be that there would have to be a finding as to whether there are any individuals that meet the determination of issue.
But hasn't the Nebraska Supreme Court said that when a provision of a will is open to more than one construction, a construction resulting in an intestacy as to any part of the estate will not be adopted if a reasonable construction can be avoided? In this case, as we've already been discussing, the decedent specifically named his wife's children as his children. Isn't that a reasonable
reading? This instance, I think the direction, I guess I would refer back to the Hyman versus Rother decision. I think this court's being put in the position that I think the Court of Appeals was in that decision, where it tried to get to the intent of, did this person mean that they were applying the definition of child or issue in the state of Virginia, or did they mean here in the state of Nebraska? And the Court of Appeals in that decision on the Supreme Court indicated that they were correct in saying that the definition of issue in the state of Nebraska applies, but they shouldn't have gone beyond that to try to construe what the intent of the testator was, because you should use the word that the testator used, which was issue.
Let me ask this question then. Is there anything improper about defining a word in your own will? He had an absolute right to define who his children were for purposes of his devise, did he not?
I do believe that he had the right. I do not believe that he had the right to change the statutory definition.
Well, let's say that he used the word children. The word children also has a statutory definition, but he had the right in his own will to say my children for purposes of my will are my stepchildren. He had the right to do that, correct?
I don't disagree that he had the right, but it puts the court in a difficult position to, and I think what the Nebraska Supreme Court was trying to indicate is that it shouldn't be the role of the court to try to interpret when specific language and terms of art are used. As otherwise, with all due respect, I don't know what the intent of the decedent was when he created this will.
Well, he had no issue, right? He had no issue.
At the time, that's correct. But what was the purpose of why he was doing that? I think what the court in the Rother decision, Hyman versus Rother decision, was saying is that it shouldn't be for the court to try to construe that, where the language used is a legal term of art and not an unambiguous term. So with that, I would reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to address you and to explain our position to you as well. We believe that it's very important that you affirm the county court's decision because by doing so, you are giving full effect to everything that Mr. Bialas did in fact state in his will. Leonard and Alice were married 40 years. At the age of 77, he executed a will, and as you've all identified in Article 1 of the will, which is labeled family members, he identifies his wife as his beloved wife, and then he identifies the four children, Mary, Thomas, Lawrence, and Donna, as my beloved children. He couldn't make it much clearer than that they were to be treated as his children. Why else would have he put that in his will? It's Article 5 then goes on to say that I give everything to my spouse if my spouse survives me. If not, it goes to my surviving issue, which, as you've identified, he had no issue at the time of executing it. He was 77 years old, approximately, the county court found, and likely he was ever going to have any issue at that point in time. So what did he mean? We know that issue is defined by statute in a lineal descendant sort of way between parent and child. Well, when he identifies who he designates as his children, he's identifying his children. And the law is very clear here. Alice predeceased him. The property, the residual estate, should then go to the children as he identified them. He did, and he said everything that he could say in his will to identify where he wanted the property to go to. We can't imagine what other purpose Article 1 would serve other than to identify who he wanted treated as his children, which ultimately treats them as his issue. The cardinal rule, this is over and over again, the cardinal rule of testamentary construction is to ascertain and give effect to the intention of the decedent. And how do we do that? The courts tell us that we consider every provision, every word, every sentence in the will. To adopt the appellant's position would require the court to completely ignore, to disregard Article 1 of his will. Now, they rely on the Glover case, and the Glover case wasn't trying to define what issue meant. What Glover was deciding was, do we apply Virginia law to this Virginia written will, or do we apply Nebraska law because it's affecting real estate in Nebraska? And the court, after reviewing, the Supreme Court here, after reviewing some Virginia cases, said it's clear that we should apply the Nebraska law, and Nebraska law allows grandchildren to be considered as issue. It wasn't a question of how we are going to define the word issue or who's included or not, it's just which state applies. Even the Glover case cited by the appellants state this. They state, the cardinal rule concerning a decedent's will is the requirement that the intention of the testator shall be given effect, and that a court must examine the decedent's will in its entirety, consider and liberally interpret every provision in a will, employ the generally accepted literal and grammatical meaning of words used in the will, and assume that the maker of the will understood the words stated in the will. I believe he understood what issue meant, and I believe that he understood what children meant. And when he said, these are my children, that was his intention, to treat them as his children, i.e. his issue.
Let me ask you something. So in that case, there's a specific quote that the Court of Appeals correctly stated that the word issue is a term of art, Therefore, because the meaning of the word issue is clear and unambiguous as defined by Nebraska statutes, it was unnecessary and impermissible for the court to construe the student's will. How would you distinguish that? I mean, are we not being asked to construe the rest of the will, having used the word issue?
I think you're being asked to construe whether or not his identification of his children as issue is what he is what the is what should happen here, whether or not the county court should construe the idea that his identified children are his issue. We know that issue includes children and does not include stepchildren. But here, he identified these four individuals as his children. And so I don't know that we're construing the word issue, per se. I think what we're construing, or what we're determining, is what his intention was. And his intention was to treat these four named people as his children, therefore they are his issue. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yeah, you're addressing the question for sure. Okay. You know, it's.
Could he have just named anybody and said, "I want them treated as my children"? Not sure why anyone would do that, but could he have done that here, where he listed these names and said, "These are my beloved children," even though maybe they were just his best friends? I mean, could he have done that, and we would have to read that to mean they're his issue?
Well, I suppose that, I mean, he has the right to give property to whomever he would choose to, and if he wants to treat his friends as though they were his issue, he could do that. I would suggest there might be a better way to do that than that way.
Right.
Whereas with these people, these four named individuals had lived with him as his children for 40 years. He, and maybe not entirely 40 years, but he lived with their mother for 40 years and therefore the children for an extended period of time. And he not only treated them as somewhat as his children by naming them his children, he also appointed two of them as successor personal representatives. He put them into a position of power, a position of trust. Your question about passing by intestacy is exactly correct. I believe that you can see from the documents that were filed with the court, if the appellants are successful, they will receive, through the law of intestacy, a 1/108th share of this estate. And there's no indication that his intention, that Leonard's intention, was that his surviving brothers and sisters and his predeceased brothers and sisters, children or grandchildren in one case, are to receive any of that property. He didn't appoint them in any way to do anything to administer the property. And so I think it's clear that he in all ways considered these four to be his children. And once we understand that he wanted them treated as his children, that fits into the definition of who he meant as issue, again, being the lineal children.
And his will, I mean, it's two pages. It's a very simple will.
Yes, it is.
And to have to suggest that his estate is now has to pass by intestacy, the law says we're not supposed to do that, right?
Correct.
If the will can be construed in a reasonable manner, we're not supposed to do that.
Right. Absolutely, that's what the law says. And I think we talked about that in our brief as well. And it's certainly reasonable to think that when he named these four as his children, he meant that they were to be treated as his children. And again, while I said he's 77 years old when he executed the will, so it's unlikely he would produce any other children or issue, he did specifically say they were to be treated like any afterborn or adopted children, I think was his wording. So he wanted them treated the same as any other blood issue, you might say, that he would have.
So, I mean, I know I don't believe you drafted this will, but it would have been a simple solution, right, after saying these are my beloved children to be considered my issue. If that would have been added in there, there'd be absolutely nothing to argue about.
I doubt that we'd be here. That's correct, Your Honor. We If he didn't want to include them, he could have simply omitted Article 1. He could have, instead of omitting Article 1, he could have said, these four people are only my stepchildren. That would have eliminated any claim they would have. He didn't do that. He identified them as his children, and we would ask that they be treated as such. Thank you very much.
Thank you. How much time do we have left?
We're about.
If I may, please know I certainly respect the argument that Mr. Emerson is making, and the decedent may very well have intended to leave his residuary estate to his stepchildren if his spouse predeceased him, as she did in this instance. However, we simply do not know. And I think the direction, and Your Honor had asked the question of the precedent, which I believe is the controlling precedent from the Rother decision of Mr. Emerson. And at the conclusion of that, it indicates that it is the duty of the court simply to enforce the clear language used. I think a lot of what we've been talking about this afternoon has been, well, we think he meant this because of this circumstance or that circumstance in his life. And I think that's all construing the will as to what we think.
It's not construing anything where he says, these are my beloved children. That's what he's saying. He's treating them as his beloved children, right?
That was the language used.
That requires no interpretation at all. It's very plain. The only argument is, from your perspective, is does the issue word in the residuary clause include those children that he's identified as his children? I don't know how you get around that. Why name them as his children if it's not to mean something?
With that, my time is up. I appreciate it. I would submit it to the court here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.